Het is bijna. Sterker nog, het is eigenlijk in mei natuurlijk meditatie. Ik hoop dat je dat weet. koekeroe.nl/meditatie. Maar we beginnen eigenlijk met Mr. Meditation. Zondag eerder. Koen de Jong ook. En dan op 1 mei gelijk echt top met alle knallers. Van Jan Geurts tot Michael Pilacic. En van Swami tot Marjolein Berendsen. Van Robert Bridgman tot, nou ja, zo kan ik ze alle 20 weer gaan opnoemen. Maar ik wil alleen maar zeggen, als je dit hoort, is het nog geen mei. Maar is het wel al bijna zover. Dus meld je aan. koekeroe.nl/meditatie.
Nou ja, je kent hem absoluut zeker. Dingen die je alleen ziet als je er de tijd voor neemt. Things you can only see when you slow down. Love for imperfect things. Het is echt niet normaal hoeveel dat boek verkocht is. All over the world. 6 miljoen keer. En nu is er een nieuw boek. En ik mag gewoon even praten met de schrijver. Het is Hemin Sunim. Hemin. Thanks for taking time.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Yeah, I just heard you came back from school for teaching.
I just, you know, finished working volunteer works for the homeless people.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I thought it was on your own school, but it was what kind of job is that?
Oh, me and other monks, you know, we go out and make dinner for homeless people every Tuesday night.
Oh, wow.
So they will come and we offer dinner to them.
Nice. So I'm glad I was able to read the new book. In November komt het uit in Nederland. When things don't go your own way, Zen wisdom for difficult times. When was the moment you thought, okay, it's necessary for me to write about this subject?
Yeah. I think, you know, that's very common theme that we human being go through, you know, everyday life as you go out and just waiting for a bus to arrive, and then just when you arrive, the bus just took off without you, you know. A lot of times, you know, when we are feeling stressed, you know, that's because precisely things are not going the way I hope it would. So This phenomena is very common for human experience, and I myself also, you know, went through that, you know, period where I felt like, you know, I had a certain idea about what I would be doing, you know, for the next couple of years, like for example. But then, you know, as we all know, we had a pandemic, you know, and then that was completely unexpected. And then, you know, personally for me, I had to, you know, take a couple of years off and then, you know, focusing more on, you know, spiritual side, which was also unexpected too. So I don't think we are completely in control of our lives. And once we realize that, and then if we can find peace with it and accept the parts that we have been refused to accept it, then I think we will have a better chance to deal with, you know, a situation where things don't go like the way you want it.
No. You say, and for me, well, this is the podcast, why I do this. If the ultimate goal of spiritual practice is unconditional peace, then the path is not of self-improvement, but of self-acceptance. And that's such a great lesson. For you, you became a big star, I can say. But you're really honest in your new book. Your fear of abandonment unfortunately grew. Can you explain us why and what happened and how do you dealt with it?
Yes. As I was becoming more and more famous in Korea, there's a, you know, sense of, you know, fear within me, which I didn't, you know, face. I was putting it away and trying not to see that. But as I was, you know, becoming more and more well known, at least, you know, among those who are reading, you know, books, I think I also was also afraid that, you know, what if, you know, people who actually like my work, what if they abandon me, you know, all of a sudden? You know, what if they, what I said, you know, irritate them, or, you know, they took it into a wrong way, and then somehow, you know, all the things that I try to do somehow gets rejected, and then thereby I feel abandoned. And then I realized that this fear is related to my childhood trauma that I had, which I repressed so much that I couldn't remember at the time. Mm-hmm. But as something, you know, unexpected, you know, things happen in my life where I was pretty, you know, harshly attacked by my fellow monk. And, you know, somebody I actually like, and I thought he was my friend. And he's also very well known in Korea. And then because his, you know, attack was very personal, and
he called you a parasite and an entertainer, no knowledge of true Buddhism. It's really hard.
Right. It's just assassinating my character. So that was very, you know, I was like complete in shock, because all other news media, you know, begin to pick up on it and talked about it, you know, for a while, mm-hmm. because it was so peculiar for a, you know, one well-known monk, you know, attacking another monk. And then, and so, but I didn't want to participate in this. I basically, you know, wanted to take time off and then maybe reflect, you know, what is going on. And as I was going through this period of reflections, I realized that there was a lot of unfelt emotion within my body, you know. I begin mm-hmm. to feel a lot of, you know, anxiety and some of the, you know, like anger, all this repressed, you know, fear, it all came out. And so I really wanted to let it reveal, let it come out, you know, through my body. So I did, you know, I hiked the mountain on a regular basis. I talked to my trusted friends. You know, I did, you know, all kinds of, you know, different type of therapy that I knew.
Like the process,
And I tried to process it. And then after all of that is done, I was standing, you know, one and one with my own fear. And so I asked my fear, you know, what are you really afraid of, you know? And then in the beginning, my fear said, well, I'm afraid that I will not be able to take care of my, you know, two parents and parents I have, you know, godson I have, all those people who are relying on me for their livelihood. But then I ask another question, you know, one more question. What are you really afraid of, you know?
Yeah.
And then I realized that I was afraid of being abandoned. Yeah. And then it hit me. You know, at that moment, the trauma, the memory came to me that I think I was really young, and I lost, you know, my mom in a big open market, and I was crying and I looking for my mom, and then some strange, you know, one lady came up to me and she told me that I will take you to your mom. So I just follow her, and then I went to her house. And then inside, I didn't see my mom. I saw a strange man. And so I knew something was wrong, even though I was very young. So, you know, I saw that there's a, you know, like a door was open. So I just ran as quickly as I could. And then I went back to the market, and I was still like searching for my mom. And then, you know, I don't know how many minutes, you know, how many, maybe 20, 30 minutes later,
it
you know.
Felt-
Yeah,
a long
time. Yes. Yeah. And then I met my mom again, and my mom was like looking for me, you know. This memory, you know, of this, you know, trauma, I repress it so much.
And yeah. So you never thought about it, and then suddenly, when you were feeling your feeling, then suddenly this old story from your youth came up. You never thought about it again since that.
Yeah, I never thought about it until this was happened. Wow. So I actually asked my mom, do you remember, you know, when I couldn't find you in an open market? And in the beginning, she actually denied. She said, no such a thing happened. You know, what do you mean? You know, but then, you know, my father told my mom, actually, that happened. You know, remember, you know? And so, yeah. And then, so I think, you know, part of my inner child, you know, I was just seeking this assurance, you know, I didn't want to be abandoned, you know, I want the, you know, care of my mother, you know?
And what do you think about this? Because, a lot of listeners will know you don't know, but this is the last conversation I have before I will become father. So actually a few days ago, it was the due date. We made a bit in a conversation. So that's why this conversation is a bit late. And now you are telling me this and I think like, oh my God, I will give my newborn some traumas. Don't you think that because, well, what happened with your mother? Yeah, it's just, well, it was a lesson for you, but you will make mistakes as a parent.
Yes. Hopefully, you know, you don't give your child trauma, not on purpose.
No, exactly.
Yeah. But I think, you know, it is also part of our journey, you know, spiritual journey. Whenever we are going through some difficult time, that's the time when we, you know, reflect, self-reflect, and try to understand who we really are, and also find the strength, you know, to carry on, and also to, you know, get up again, and then find meaning and purpose in our lives. So nothing is really, you know, terrible, I think, you know, because it always teaches something.
Yeah. But then, like I said, I love your new book. But there's one thing, and now you're talking about this, that says pain teaches life lessons, pleasure doesn't. And then I was thinking, for example, within a few days, I will holding a newborn baby. I don't know how the feeling is. But I can imagine that in that case, I feel, pleasure does give me like a life lesson, for unconditional love, for example. So can you explain that a bit? Because pain teaches life lessons, pleasure doesn't. Well, sounds a bit negative for me.
Oh, okay. So when I said, you know, the pleasure, you know, I meant more like, you know, when everything is going well. Like, you know, checking on your social media, like doing things in a mindless way, you know, there's no friction in our lives. We just glide, you know, we just
I know what you mean. Okay, and I'm very curious, do you now with this new book, was there like a conversation or a message from that brother who teach you a lesson in the end, but who was very critic about you? Are you in contact nowadays?
Well, I'm not really in contact with him, and he doesn't live in Korea. So, you know, he actually, he lives outside of Korea. And so it's, you know, and I think, I just really wanted to do my own work first, you know, before meeting him. And so, you know, when he comes back and try to reach out to me, then I can sit down and maybe we can talk about, you know, what happened. It took me some time for me to become ready.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But he will know that you are talking about this but I hope, well, within a few years, he will talk about this. Yeah.
Yes.
Because this is like, it's not really like a paradox, but it's like a thin line. So we are talking about rejection and you feel abandoned. But of course, it's also a good lesson in your new book as well. Don't seek validation from others. And that is, you know what I mean? So don't seek validation from others versus rejections always hurts. We are like human beings. We are busy with validation in a certain way, don't you think?
Yeah, of course, you know, when our work is just, you know, received really well, yeah, you know, people like what we do, and or people like our presence, you know, just being near me, you know, they like me, then yeah, it feels great. But if you are just depending on somebody else's, you know, praise or criticisms, you know, then you are not in control of your inner state, you know. Basically, you gave away your power to other people, and then let the surrounding, you know, let the circumstance determines, you know, how you feel. But if we can just, you know, get in touch with our own intrinsic value, you know, who we really are and what is the purpose of our lives and what motivates us in every day in the morning, then, you know, whether you get praise or, you know, criticized, you can still, you know, move forward. And because, you know, ultimately, you know what it is that you want to do in your life.
Yeah, that's a good explanation, because it goes hand in hand then. And still, rejection will hurt, but you don't are looking for validation all the time. That's what you're saying, yeah.
Yeah, and also, you know, just because that person reject me doesn't mean that I will get rejected every time, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And it is just because, you know, we are not a good fit, you know, like, right? We don't like everybody, right?
No.
They're a part of, you know, certain population we dislike, right? So it's quite natural that some other people will dislike me. Yeah. So, but there will be plenty of people who will be happy to work with me, you know, happy to listen to me. So I would say that, you know, just don't give up, you know, just because, you know, a couple of individuals rejected you.
Just as we take a daily vitamin supplement, let's take the potent gratitude pill by counting our blessings every morning. That's a great one. That's really one of my favorites in your new book. You were talking about morning, and this is about morning. It's always a ritual kind of in my podcast to ask the question, do you have like a morning routine? And I'm very curious, Haemin Sunim, what's your morning routine? Do you have like a ritual in the morning?
Right. Because I'm a, you know, Buddhist monastics, I get up and then I participate in the prayer, you know, the morning prayer. Usually it involves, you know, Buddhist, you know, sacred texts I recite. And then after that, I take a minute and sit, and without any kind of object in mind, you know, rather than focusing on a single object, I let my awareness become the object. So, and then, you know, afterwards, I go out and start exercising. So I try to take care of my body. And
yeah, and what kind of exercise?
I love to walk, actually. The brisk morning walk is the kind of, you know, thing that I go for. And then after usually like 40 minutes or, you know, 1 hour of, you know, brisk, you know, walk, fast walk, then I would just go back and have coffee or tea. And then I, you know, if I have time, I would love to just, you know, read, you know, a couple of books that I, you know, am having. And then I start my day afterwards.
Yeah, nice. And are you a cold shower man or not?
I like to go to cold, you know, in Asia, in Korea, you know, we have, we are, you know, sauna culture. I'm sure it is also the same in Northern Europe. So I sometimes go to the cold pool and then alternate to, you know, hot pool and back and forth.
Yeah, great. I am like, besides this podcast, I'm a radio DJ. And I heard it in another podcast that someday you were a radio DJ as well.
Yes, I was. I for about two years. Yes, there was one Buddhist network. They wanted to start a radio program, so I was invited, and so I get to introduce all the music that I love throughout the world, sure. And then connect with my audience through music. Yes,
that's great. And at first, you mentioned somewhere you were talking as low as you could.
Yes.
And at a certain point, you thought, why am I doing this? It's not necessary. Just be yourself, which is a great lesson for life. Be who you are.
Right, right. Because, I think people like to see authentic person, right? Somebody who doesn't wear persona and try to just pretend this person to be. We want to see not just the good part, also somebody who can embrace the who he is or who she is.
Yeah. Talking about radio, there's a great how do you call it? Is it like a poem? Do you call it a poem? For me, it's like sometimes a poem.
Poem or a stanza or
Yeah. If you want to hear easy listening music, just tune your radio to the right frequency. If you want to live a prosperous life, adjust your mindset to focus on gratitude and giving. This will attract more blessings to come your way, much like easy listening music continues to play on the same radio frequency. This is a good one. But I was thinking about this, and sometimes, because, life will be hard, and sometimes I feel, and I want to know how you think about it, that if people are, like living on a pink cloud and are listening to easy listening, for example, all the time, then when something happens, which is like hard rock, which is heavy in your life, then you are not really trained with it. Do you know what I mean?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. So when we are living our lives, it's not just always playing, soft, easy listening, circumstance, right? There's a plenty of, cases where people will shout at you and criticize you, try to pull you down, right? But I think, you can also choose, rather than feeling like you're the victim of the circumstance.
Yeah.
You can have an intentionality. I have this intention to reconnect with positive side of myself, gratitude, for example, not just myself, my relationship to other people, my relationship to nature, to wonderful food that I'm having in front of me. So this ability to appreciate what we are having, what we already has been given to us. I think this can shield us from all this, toughness of our lives. Yeah. When that came, you can still have some control, not to be sucked into it.
No, that's a good difference between like a spiritual bypass or just, make yourself stronger with love, which of course can. And that's I'm really a fan of your new book because even jealousy, which for me is like, a feeling I'm not really aware of, but since I read your book, you say even jealousy, which is kind of a negative emotion maybe, it can motivate you.
Yes, I think it can inspire you, to become who you really want to be. Maybe we are jealous because a part of us, we know that we can be, just as good as that person. Mm-hmm. It may take some time, it may take quite a bit of effort, but I know that if this was completely out of my reach, then I don't think we'll be so jealous of that person.
No.
I'm not jealous of Bill Gates, for example.
No.
I am jealous of my when I was young, I was jealous of my cousin. Right. So Yeah, so you can actually use that, harness that, you know, as a motivating, you know, force.
Yeah. And how do you deal, because you have ambition and you know, there's this new book and I sold a lot of copies. So, of course, you are curious what will happen with this new book. How do you control your ambition in a way that you won't overextend yourself?
The truth is that, you know, once the book has been published, I realized that the book has a life of its own, independent of the author. You know, I would have never, ever, you know, imagined that my book will be so well received in, you know, like, especially in the Netherlands. I feel so grateful, but it's completely unexpected too, you know. So, you know, again, I think life can be tough, but at the same time, it can give us a lot of blessings. So whichever it comes, if we can just bring the attitude of acceptance and appreciations and gratitude, you know, hopefully that will, you know, we will learn our lesson, but at the same time, offer something good to the world.
Yeah, well, you definitely do. I'm wondering, when do you come up with those, great words? For example, the radio I just mentioned, this is one of my favorite, and I think you were eating a pizza at that moment. The quality of a pizza is determined the moment you first bite into it. It often has to do with how well the dough was prepared to create the crust. Only if it's true to the basics of pizza dough will the other ingredients shine. So if your business is not doing well, see if you have overlooked the basics. When you came up with this great comparison.
Yeah, because I love pizza. So you know, whenever I, you know, try different type of pizza, I it's the crust, you know, it's the crust.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just all this, you know, fancy topping. I think it's the basic, you know, and I'm trying to think, maybe we tend to just overlook, you know, most fundamental elements, and try to just focus on this fancy element just to, you know, make it nice, you know, it may not work for the long, you know, for the long term, you know, maybe it will work just for the short term, but not for the long term. So I think it's important to go back and see where I overlooked, you know, some of the basic elements.
Great. And are you making notes in your phone, or you have a book? Because I can imagine you're reading a pizza and make this great, and then you write it down, or how do you work?
Yeah, sometimes I just write it on my phone, you know, sometimes I would write it on my note, you know. So whenever I have this inspiration, then I will try to jot it down.
There are different chapters in this book. When your heart is aching, when your feeling is burned out, joyless. For me, it resonates really well, and I think it's like think of this world nowadays. When loneliness visits you, that's chapter 4, and that's, for me, it's like a big theme in the world. We are all busy with social media, and it says social, but in a way, the loneliness is getting more and more. How come, do you think?
Yeah, like, you know, we mistakenly equate some of the verbal, like, you know, very superficial connections with deep connections. I think it's important that to know the difference between loneliness and aloneness, right? And so, just because I'm alone, it doesn't mean that I automatically feel lonely. Sometimes when I'm alone, I feel free. You know, I feel I get to do what I want to do without really have to agree to the things that I don't want to do, you know, with other people, right? So it's the same situation. You are alone, but if you begin to see that, oh, this is a problem, then this quickly becomes loneliness.
Yeah.
You are resisting, you know, the current situation, you know, just being alone. Then this becomes a problem. However, if you are not resisting, and in fact, you actually appreciate that in a moment of being alone, then it's
a moment for yourself.
Yeah. You get to do, you know, you can take care of yourself. You can do a little more self-care, you know. You can, all the things that you really wanted to do and yet you didn't have enough time, you get to do this. At the same time, you know, I would say that just because we can just, you know, quickly text your friend, you know, it doesn't mean that that's enough for our the happiness or social connections. I think we need to make an effort and say, hey, I would like to meet you on such and such a date, and let's have dinner, or let's have, you know, can I invite you over? Can we have a coffee? So although it takes a bit of effort, you know, actually sitting down and having actual conversations, listening to your friend's voice and facial expressions, you know, all of that sympathetic, this loving presence that you experience, I think that's what makes us happy too. So we should take a look at our cell phone or mobile phone and, you know, go through the all the, you know, all of your friends and see if you, you know, whom you haven't, you know, talked to. And once you reach out to your friend will be very happy that you did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good one. So do it all now, if you're listening. But on the other hand, I'm curious, how do you deal with it yourself? Because, of course, the technique is great. We are now talking and recording this podcast without being in the same room, which is great because I feel the connection. And of course, when you will be in Holland, I would love to shake hands because that's the real thing. But I can imagine you as a writer, you are traveling a lot, and well, suddenly, like, yeah, the phone is your world, is your connection with Korea, for example. How do you deal with it that you, well, still make real connection instead of just texting and liking all the time? That's
right. I mean,
it's so difficult.
Yeah, I you know, I am very dedicated to my friends. I tend to just plan. So I tend to say, hey, let's go, you know, Saturday, what do you do Saturday night? You know, so I make plan, you know, with my friends. Mm-hmm. And contrary to, you know, a lot of people's imagination, I am not that busy. So I always have time for my friends, you know, like maybe if I say to my friend, you know, that the Hemin as a writer, maybe he's hard to reach, but, you know, Hemin as your friend is like, it's so easy to be rich, right?
Yeah. Okay, that's great.
So, I really I felt, you know, blessed that I have so many wonderful friends, and I try to harness, you know, try to cultivate our friendships.
Mm-hmm. But if you are traveling, for example, to Holland, or do you travel then alone, or you take friends with you?
Oh, I will travel alone. And if I have a friend there, I would try to arrange meetings. Like, for example, yeah, you know, in Amsterdam, you know, I have a couple, you know, from the Netherlands. I know them, so maybe I'll meet them. I do my best.
Yeah, you have friends all over the world nowadays, of course. Talking about this, social media and the phone, how do you deal with all the negativity in the news? You write about that. It's important to consider how many of these new updates are truly necessary for our well-being. Remember, we have a choice not to be aware of every piece of negative news in the world at all times. And I feel you. But at the same time, it's like war at this moment. So, yeah, how do you deal with that? You can't hide from it. It's like a play.
Right. Like, you know, I'm not advocating willful ignorance, you know?
No, exactly.
I'm asking people to take more control over your screen time, for example, you know? Rather than just sitting in front of your TV mindlessly, without actually connecting with your family member, for example, you know, you know, that's not good, right? So you have a choice. You know, it's not like you are the victim of the whole situation. You can say, "Hey, yes, I will. You know, of course, I will learn about what's happening, but I'm not going to just, you know, spend hours and hours just scrolling down, you know, news site or just watching CNN. I will also put aside and have a quality time and with my friends and families. So you do have a control.
But on the other hand, I don't know, for example, with your colleague monks, do you like do prayer for war or negative news, or don't you do those kind of things? I have no idea.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, we do a lot of prayer, you know, you know, the victims of, you know, any kind of natural disaster or war, you know, we care for them and we have a lot of compassion for them. I guess what I was, you know, trying to suggest was that rather than, you know, feeling like, you know, we are like we lose ourselves, you know, in the oceans of, you know, infinite information right now. So rather than you know, losing yourself in the news, you know, I want you to check with yourself, you know, how am I doing? Am I feeling, you know, okay? You know, watching all this negative news is impacting me in a very unhealthy way, then maybe I should pause, you know? So I think this having self-awareness about how I am doing, you know, this is what I've tried to come across.
Yeah, it's clear. Thank you. Why would I want to ruin my inner peace by staying angry at those who have wronged me? Forgiveness is not for them. It is for me. I was reading that and I was wondering, I don't know, have you ever read the Course in Miracles? Because it's really, do you know it?
No, I don't know the book, but I heard of the Course in Miracles. But I think, you know, this message of forgiveness is also very much a part of Buddhism. You know, we cannot sever, you know, hatred with hatred. You know, it's going to continue. You know, if you just want to revenge, and then there's another revenge. So at some point, you know, one of us has to be brave and think about our, you know, future generation and say, "Hey, I've decided not to hate you anymore, because hatred only brings more hatred. I know that I suffer, you know, I know that you also suffer, but I have made up my mind, you know, not to continue this chain of hatred." Yeah. So
and even if there isn't a conversation, or maybe the person isn't alive anymore, you can still forgive him or her for yourself.
Yes, absolutely. Like, you know, people mistakenly think that when we forgive others, somehow we are giving them some kind of free pass. You know, we are saying that, "Hey, it was okay." You know, like, no. Forgiveness doesn't make what happened in the past okay. Can you see me?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay.
Yes. So, yes. So I think, you know, forgiveness is for ourselves, you know, definitely. To to not to be the, you know, the prisoner, you know, of what happened, and so that we can just move on with our lives. When we are thinking about, you know, revenge, for example, again, we are giving the power to the person who hurt us, and then hoping that that person will feel a lot of pain, you know, as we are inflicting revenge. But you are giving the power to them. You know, what if that person is not suffering, you know, even after our revenge? So rather than focusing on them, you should focus on well-being of yourself and try to move on. I think the best revenge is you become, you know, like happy, and you become spiritually mature, you know, growing because of that experience, and moving on. And that's
the best revenge. Yeah, exactly. You can't change the past, so look forward. Yeah, that's great. Yeah. Talking about books, I ask you to mention three books that inspired you as a human being in your life. And you just told us that you will quite read a lot. So it will be a different question. But can you mention a book that really inspired you?
Yes. When I was in high school, I first read Krishnamurti, Jiddu Krishnamurti's books, Freedom from the Known. Freedom from the Known. And to me, that was really difficult book. At that time, especially the idea that true freedom is freedom from the known. And I didn't understand what he was saying, you know. But, you know, as I was getting older and, you know, went through many different type of, you know, spiritual, you know, practice, I realized that, you know, real freedom is the, you know, freedom from what we already know. And so that book really changed my life. It's not an easy book to read, if you can actually, you know, go through with this, you know, you'll find some, you know, great lessons. And then another
book, and you wrote that before you were 25. So this was one of the reasons maybe you became a monk.
Yes. I was really influenced by that. You know, Jiddu Krishnamurti's wonderful work. And then, you know, I really liked, you know, Tara Brach's, you know, she, you know, becoming my, you know, a friend, and she's a wonderful, wonderful teacher. And her book, you know, Radical Acceptance, you know, for example, I find it very easy to read, very relatable. But at the same time, she's bringing spiritual lessons too. So I really like that book, you know, personally. And then the, you know, last one that I would say, you know, Thich Nhat Hanh's, you know, any of Thich Nhat Hanh's book, you know.
Dit is leuk. Ik onderbreek even het gesprek, maar alle boeken die je net gehoord hebt, die zijn terug te vinden natuurlijk op de site koekeroe.nl/boekenkast. Maar ik heb een extraatje, want daar vind je ook een link naar een aanbieding van Next Story, waarmee je alle boeken 50 dagen gratis kan lezen en luisteren. En dan hebben we het niet alleen over deze drie boeken. Nee, er staan daar 300.000 luisterboeken en e-books. Dus ga naar koekeroe.nl/boekenkast om 50 dagen lang gratis Next Story te gebruiken. Top toch? Thanks.
Because, you know, I was translator when he came to visit Seoul. And his book is, again, very, you know, easy to read. And at the same time, it contains, you know, deep lessons. So I would recommend, you know, three authors.
Yeah. And you met him when he was like 88. I can imagine it's like an inspiration for you as well to, well, work hard, or, well, maybe that's, you know what I mean? So, yeah, well, yeah, stay on the line and. Well, give inspiration for so many people. That's what you are doing now.
Yes, it was truly amazing for me because I, you know, have known him through his books, you know, and then actually seeing him teaching people and connecting with people, you know, you know, walking together with people, that was really, truly special.
Yeah. There's one thing, and of course, well, like I said before, the whole thing about self acceptance instead of improvement, that really is, well, what this podcast is about. But you start with your book with a really, yeah, mind-blowing thing, that all this goes against our instincts to avoid uncomfortable feelings. So I am wondering if you give us a, well, some inspiration to do those uncomfortable things, because it's like you said, it's not like how we are built, how our brain is built. And that's some, yeah, well, that's really kind of a problem.
Could you repeat the last question?
Yeah.
I couldn't hear.
No, okay. So can you give us advice how to, well, go above our instinct? Because our instinct is avoid uncomfortable feelings.
Right, right,
but
right.
There we are growing, of course, but yeah.
Yeah. I think what happened is that there are part of us, we just could not face. We could not, we don't want to sit and uncover the truth. You know, the truth mm-hmm. can be scary, or the parts that, the part that I don't want to face, it actually becomes part of our subconscious, you know, unconscious, and it becomes part of our darkness, you know, dark side. Yeah. But just because we repressed it doesn't mean that it go away. And so if you can just sit, you know, whenever there is some annoyance, whenever there is some psychological resistance, deeper truth is waiting for you. If you can just relax, it's okay. It's not gonna, you know, it's not gonna make you die. You know, you're not gonna die from it. Yeah, right. So if you can just and say, wait, you know, like for example, I feel really uncomfortable being alone. You know, I feel so lonely. Right. For example, then you can always try to avoid, you know, feeling lonely by, you know, contacting your friends and try to make yourself really busy, you know. However, you can decide, hey, you know, what's happening? You know, why am I feeling so uncomfortable, you know, when I'm being, you know, alone, or, you know, when I feel lonely? Let's just, you know, get to the bottom of it. You know, what's there, you know? So it becomes part of like self-inquiry. You know, I would like to get to know me, you know,
observe yourself, your feelings. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then, you know, like deeper truth will come out to you.
You are, this is what you are talking about. If you express your anger without any filter, it will become bad karma and return to you. If you just suppress your anger and bottle it up, it will then emerge as an illness in your body. And then we were just talking about this last thing. If you quietly observe the energy of your anger, it will change shape on its own and disappear. But talking about the middle part of this, I really feel it. But sometimes people are getting angry because then they say, yo, but I have this, or a person that I know has this terrible disease. And is it just then because they aren't feeling their feelings? How do you deal with that if people are, well, become a little bit mad if about talking about that you yourself made that illness?
Yeah, I think we need to learn how to express our feeling, you know, including, you know, angers and frustration, hatred, in a like creative and non-destructive way. You know, if you are to express it, you know, without any filter, you can seriously damage your relationship. You can end your friendship. You can end your relationship with your partner, you know, for example. So how can I still express my, you know, feeling, you know, without damaging, you know, my relationships? You know, you can do that through many different means. Like, you know, there's so many different therapies. For example, you know, you can do dance therapy, for example. You know, you can express, like listen to what your body wants to do. You know, like if there's a lot of anger in your body, let it come out, you know, through your movement. And you can do the traditional, you know, talk therapy, and you know, your therapist will listen to you and become very sympathetic to what you have to say. So rather than just expressing directly, you know, at that moment and thereby damaging your relationship, because in the long run, maybe you don't want that. You know, you don't want to damage your, you know, relationship, your marriage, or your, you know, relationship with your children. So I don't want you to deny your feeling, but express in a creative way.
Wow. Well, you're talking about children now, and I'm wondering, because this is my pink cloud I'm sitting in, so maybe it's a bit weird question to ask to you as you are a monk, but don't you feel almost the need to be a father, or do you think, well, I'm a teacher, I'm in a different way a father?
I think you answered my question. question. I think I feel like my mission is to, you know, help many people, you know, as many people as I can. So rather than being a father to one or two or three children, I am happier being a monk and having this kind of conversations, like, for example.
Yeah, that's great. And do you have any other ambitions, things you would like to achieve? Do you have goals?
Well, my goal is to the Bodhisattva, you know, idea. That is, you know, whatever I do, you know, I hope that my words and my actions bring deeper understanding and reconciliations and, you know, enlightenment or positive emotions, appreciation of our lives. So I want to, you know, I would love to just bring benefits to the world. And that's my mission. It can be done through my writings, and it can be done through my social media, you know. It can be done through my work with volunteer works that I'm doing now, or School for Broken Hearts. It can be so many different things, but ultimately I want to bring benefit to other people.
Ja, de School of Broken Hearts, dat is een waanzinnig initiatief. Meer dan 3000 studenten die zijn er al. It's really about a school about healing and growth, I heard.
Right.
That's great.
Yes. Yeah, people go through many difficulty in our lives. And when we are, you know, in the middle of it, we feel so alone, you know. Like, for example, we had sessions, you know, people who are going through cancers, and they told me that at home, they are the one who ended up comforting their family members, because they all call and say, hey, are you okay? And they say, what can you say? You know, when they say, are you okay? They say, yeah, I'm okay. You know, don't worry, I'm okay. But in fact, they are not okay. You know, they feel terrified. But they cannot show it to their children or their partner, you know. So what do they do? They actually hide it, you know. So I wanted to invite those people and share honest, you know, frank, feeling, and have deeper conversations. That brought a lot of strength and a lot of wisdom, you know, because some people said, oh, I went through that, you know, chemotherapy, and then I got better, you know. So there's a, you know, element of hope, you know. Yeah. Also, when they feel, when they are grieving, then, you know, we can all grieve together, you know. And afterward, it feels so much better.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. That's, well, I hope someday there will be a school for broken hearts in Holland as well. But we have other good initiatives, but yeah. Are you afraid of death?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. My honest question would be yes. I didn't want to say, just give a, you know, typical,
good like, answer like
yeah,
that.
Yeah. But at the same time, I see that as a part of the, you know, process. I think we experience, you know, death in our lives, like, you know, death of our relationships, you know, death of our friendship, death of our career. So we go through many, you know, but at the same time, just because there's a death of one thing doesn't mean that that is the end. You know, it actually leads to different, you know, career, or it may open up a new friendship, you know. So just because one part of you, it just, you know, you feel as though mm-hmm. there's, you know, you're experiencing death of something, doesn't mean that it is the end. You know, likewise, I believe that death will not be the end.
Oh, so that's my next question. Yeah. Always. So, what do you think that will happen?
I don't know.
No, of course not. But you sometimes you think about it.
Yeah. But the thing is, our true nature, you know, in Buddhism, you know, if you are awakened to our true nature, this true nature is beyond, you know, birth and death. So this true nature is something that you recognize, and that's who you really are. You know, you can identify yourself with your body or feeling or your thoughts or your, you know, consciousness. However, your true nature is not those objects, you know, your body and feeling and emotion. They can be all observed, and thereby they are the object. However, your true nature is that which is observing.
Exactly. You are talking about a famous Korean song. I didn't know it. Thorn Bird. It's about different kind of me's, and we all know the different voices, and but you say besides all the voices, besides even your body, there's like a true essence, and that's who you really are.
Yes.
And that will stay forever. What do you think?
Yes, because that does not know, you know, birth, that does not know death. So that the awareness, you know, that which is aware, never experienced birth, and therefore it will never experience death.
That's great, because now suddenly I realize in a certain way my child is already born, or not in the real way, but well, like the essence, the real essence we're talking about. It's a bit weird to talk about, but well, yeah, it's there. And well, at a certain point, you as a body, the body will be death. And so how do you want to be remembered?
Well, I would like to be remembered as somebody who tried to do his best, tried to bring some, you know, positivity and wisdom to the world. And, you know, that'll be great if people remember me as such.
Yeah, well, they definitely will with all those great inspiration and motivation you give. And well, besides all the people who will not really know you, but will know you from your work, there's this great, well, kind of poem you wrote yourself about friendship. Thank you for still being my friend, even after knowing my flaws and problems. I am fortunate to have you in my life, or in this case, to have you in my life. Thank you so much for your time, Heyman.
Oh, thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Yeah. We haven't talked about this last kind of story. I hope a big guy of Disney will read it and they will say, okay, we make Roundy the movie. That will be great. No spoiler at all. People have to read your book about who is Rondi. I can only say it's a fish and you have to read it. It's a great story.
Great. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for your time and all the things you are doing. I hope to see you when you will be in Holland. But to be honest, I have no idea because, well, then I am a father and in my own bubble.
Right.
But whatever. There will be one day. And, well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
For your time again.
Thank you.
Hey, mensen, toenem. Ik ben heel benieuwd wat je ervan vond. Engels, dat is altijd even wennen. Maar ik heb voor mijn gevoel wel gevraagd wat je wilde. Laat vooral wat achter in de reacties. Check dat boek dus. When Things Don't Go Your Own Way. Maar er is dus, of Go Your Way. Maar er is dus ook een Nederlandse versie van. Die zet ik in de beschrijving. Ik weet nu even door de paniek even niet meer de Nederlandse versie. Dankjewel, dit was Koekeroe. Tot de volgende. Zonnegroet.
Hoi.
Dankjewel voor het luisteren. Leuk dat je het hele gesprek gecheckt hebt. En ik kom je dan toch nog even binnenvallen om een kleine reminder te doen. Niet pushy, relaxed, in stilte. Nou, niet in stilte, want ik praat. Maar heb je jezelf al aangemeld? Ja. koekeroe.nl/meditatie. Anders kan je dat nu doen. Koekeroe, dat is koekeroe.nl/meditatie. Meditatie met een i, want dat is wat we gaan doen. Van 1 tot 10 mei. En het is helemaal gratis, hè, het live kijken. koekeroe.nl/meditatie.